Welcome back. It's a Tuesday, the second day of May, 2023. I'm your host, Mark Hall. And to say the big lies continue isn't news at all, but it's kind of interesting how thin some of the veneer is getting. For example, let's start off with this story that I thought was at least funny, if not downright disgusting. Comes courtesy of Christina Layla and the Gateway Pundit about none other than the chief spokesliar for the senile Biden-Fuhrer. And it's arguably a good match. Karine Jean-Pierre has made another idiotic, in-your-face claim, which certainly is a bald-faced lie, but this time, folks, it just may have a bit of the Clintonian element of truth in it. Listen carefully. White House Press Secretary KJP on Monday absurdly claimed that illegal immigration is down 90% because of the Biden-Fuhrer's policies. And among other things, Title 42, a Trump-era program forcing migrants that are claiming to seek asylum to remain in Mexico, expires in a week or so. And yep, no doubt about it, illegal immigration is way, way out of control. At least 5 million illegals have crossed the border since the rigged election was shoved down American throats. And here's the quote from the chief spokesliar. When it comes to illegal migration, you've seen it come down by more than 90%, and that's because of the actions that this president has taken, unquote. Says TGP, that may be the biggest single lie yet, and your host has to say, no, I disagree. They've just changed the meaning of the word illegal immigrant. There's actually a lot of truth in that, folks, if you understand it from the truly Clintonian perspective.
It all depends on what the meaning of the word illegal is.
All you got to do is just change the definition and understand, since there is no illegal immigration anymore, anybody that comes in gets to stay. Why, you could arguably say, hey, illegal immigration is down 100% because it simply doesn't exist. These are just invaders coming across to do what invaders always end up doing. From there, we move on to another lie. You can guess what's going to come of this one. First, the coverage from the Daily Mail. GOP senators, it says, have accused the so-called Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, of, guess what, lying to Congress about Hunter Biden emails and the Burisma business dealings, or were they just plain graft, corruption, and outright bribery? Emails show that Blinken and his wife attempted to influence U.S. government officials on behalf of Ukrainian gas firm Burisma. They bought and paid for the crackhead son, and now they and the other communists pretty much own what's left of the American government. GOP Senators Ron Johnson and Chuck Grassley, says the piece, are accusing Biden's Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, of providing false testimony, how's that for an understatement, to Congress related to the crackhead whoremonger frontman for the big guy. In a letter Monday, it says, to Blinken, obtained by the Daily Mail, the senators wrote that the false statements occurred when he sat for a transcribed interview in December 2020 before the Senate Homeland Security and Government Affairs Committee while still working for the Biden campaign and gunning for the Secretary of State job. Based on what's now become available, Blinken's 2020 statement to Congress was a bald-faced lie. Or, as Senator Johnson put it, a bold-faced lie. Here he is talking to Maria Bartiromo.
Anthony Blinken finally did come in and sit down for a voluntary transcribed interview in December of 2020 because he wanted to be Secretary of State. And now because of more information that's come out, we know that he lied bold-faced to Congress about never emailing Hunter Biden. My guess is he told a bunch of other lies that hopefully we'll be able to bring him and his wife back in, tell them to preserve their records. You cannot trust Joe Biden. You cannot trust Hunter Biden. You can't trust the Biden family. You can't trust so many of the people that they have surrounded themselves with.
He called them, and I would say appropriately, made men, and then asked this question.
What do you do when you have, in effect, co-conspirators of the Biden family inside the agencies, inside our intelligence agencies, the Department of Justice, the FBI, and you have the political party, the Democrats, who couldn't care less, have no interest whatsoever in the corruption that is being uncovered bit by bit as we pull back the layers of the onion here.
Without question, he said he lied under oath.
He said he did not email Hunter Biden, and now we have those emails. We also know that his wife, using her private email address when she was a employee of the State Department, was basically a conduit between her husband and Hunter Biden as well.
There seem to be a lot of conduits in the swamp. item. Here's another big lie, and yeah, we knew it anyway, but that doesn't make it any less horrific. Pfizer's latest tranche of documents, which the FDA sought in a court to keep hidden for 75 years from Americans, confirms that in fact the evil company knew that women who had been exposed to the vaccine, and interestingly, that doesn't even require having the poison poke injected directly, could have been injected through a vagina, for example, by a vaccinated sexual partner, were sustaining spontaneous abortions and miscarriages. As Dr. Naomi Wolf writes, Pfizer knew that exposure, as they defined it, including sexual intercourse, as well as skin contact and inhalation, resulted in 19% of the babies identified in the first 3 months of the study having sustained adverse events. And as Naomi Wolf points out, they didn't even call these spontaneous abortions. They called them missed abortions. And why would you use a phrase like that in internal documents unless there was another agenda here? You knew this too. Babies who nursed from injected moms had a whole plethora of adverse events. And what's more, they even knew it was harming multiple aspects of the reproductive process in women. That's the real kind, folks, as opposed to the Bud Light kind. This next story, folks, is one that I actually spent some time debating, not only whether to do it, but if I did, how? Because I'll admit right up front, it's fairly complicated, and you'll have to pay attention in order to follow all the connections here. But it comes from Tom Luongo via LouRockwell.com. It's also up on his website, Gold, Goats, and Guns, and that's a great title, too. I really like Tom's work, and there's no doubt about it. It's very important, and he makes some incredibly amazing and, yep, downright fundamental points. But another feature that I like about his work is that he's not afraid to tell you exactly how you can tell how it's turning out, whether he's right or wrong, or at least which way the coin's going to get flipped. The article's entitled Tucker, BlackRock, and the SIFI Two-Step. And he begins by noting that the big news this week was the unceremonious firing of Tucker Carlson from a now undeniably at this point faux news. And as you've no doubt noted, there's no shortage of explanations for why it might have happened. And there's probably a nugget of truth in most of them. But what this did, says Luongo, was underscore just how much real power Tucker amassed during his time in the primetime slot anchoring Fox's entire evening. And the corollary is, this is a serious needle scratch, he says, because something has changed behind the scenes dramatically. Within an hour, Don Lemon, no loss there, was dumped by the criminally negligent network. Susan Rice left the Biden regime that morning. Nate Silver was ousted from ABC News. And the usual dump and spin and so forth has followed. Nuts and sluts, he says, is a time-tested method of invalidating a public figure. Beauty is, it doesn't even have to be true. It just has to play, even if only for a little while. But while all the court politics of this might be interesting, they feel a bit now like discussing 9/11 or the Kennedy assassination. Does it matter who was behind the scenes? Why Carlson was ousted? Couldn't we see this coming the further he went off the reservation? In fact, says Tom Luongo, I was kind of amazed that he was still on the air after all this time. And on that score, folks, he's not alone. But what this really feels like, he says, and I think this is part of the main point, folks, and as he points out, it's bigger than Tucker Carlson, is an attempt to completely change the direction of information flow as we arguably get ready for the next big psyop, which he suggests, and I guess among other things, is the, quote, remaking of the first fungal president into the next garden variety wartime president. Which, leaving aside the obvious question of whether the word president even belongs in the same sentence with the senile Biden Fuhrer, is important, suggests Tom Luongo, because you've heard it, you're going to hear it again, wartime presidents don't lose elections, whether they're rigged or not. Statistics, which are simply chum for people who feed their confirmation biases and prevent any coming together of the center of the electorate to say what should be obvious by now. We've had enough. I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. And yeah, no more. Which, he notes, is Tucker's real crime, if any of us are being even remotely honest with ourselves. And that just might be the least interesting part of the whole story. Because what's missing here is what he is going to go to next. The entire BlackRock angle. Huh? And here includes a tweet from somebody I've never heard of, which is kind of eye-catching, certainly interesting, and yeah, there's a twist, too. BlackRock, it says, owns 59 million shares of Dominion. BlackRock owns 45.7 million shares of Fox. BlackRock sued itself and fired Tucker Carlson as part of that lawsuit. Have you figured it out yet? Well, continues the tweet from independent fact-checkers, and hey, doesn't that inspire trust? This is false, and have we ever heard that before? Well, writes Luongo, is it true? How are you going to know? And besides, it doesn't matter, because all of this said, there's a BlackRock angle to this story, but it isn't what people were led to believe for a couple of years. And that, folks, is why I'm doing the piece. Says Tom Luongo, BlackRock increased their ownership in Fox just before these events, which is symptomatic of BlackRock's use of proxy to get what they want. Larry Fink, the CEO, is notorious for his antics in forcing heads of state and CEOs to do his bidding, while hiding behind the smokescreen of, I'm just a guy investing your hard-earned capital on your behalf for the good of humanity. Which is, he notes, some prime-time grade AA bullshit. Because BlackRock is Davos's main arm-twisting subsidiary in the C-suites of the S&P 500, as well as the Euro Stoxx 50. And here he gives the European link, but you'll have to translate it from German. And maybe the guy ought to just change his first name to Don, but there are some ethnic issues with this, outside of Queens. Still, though, he says, as I've discussed in previous private blog posts for my patrons, as well as public interviews, BlackRock bet the farm on the Obama-Biden regime getting rid of Jerome Powell. They went all in on their CARES Act power to access the Fed's discount window to procure zero-cost seed capital to buy U.S. stocks and, by extension, real estate and just about everything else. He provides a graph here to make that point, and then notes that the company's growth was turbocharged during the COVID-19 pandemic, but by then it was already growing at more than $1 trillion annually already. Its assets under management fell in 2022 because the value of the underlying assets fell as Powell put the interest rate screws on a lot of BlackRock's investments. The headlines have been full of governors like Florida's Ron DeSantis going on an anti-BlackRock, anti-ESG, and anti-woke tirade. No doubt about it. That at least is a good thing. And all of that has helped to see some outflow from BlackRock's funds. But still, it doesn't do a whole lot in the face of $10 trillion in assets under management, or AUM, where a few billion is literally nothing but a rounding error. No, he says, here's the big deal. The far bigger effect came from the Fed's fund rate going from 0% to 5% in a year. Now, here's where Luongo shifts it into gear. In the late stages of ZIRP, he said, zero interest rate policy, for years we saw really strong moves in the equity markets, especially coming out of the COVID pandemic as the so-called CARES Act money made its way into the economy. And as a result, normie fintwit, as he calls it, in other words, people drinking the Kool-Aid, they're always going on about the Fed subsidizing the wealth effect as their main argument for why Powell is just, quote, one more meeting away from eventually pivoting away from its higher rates for longer shtick. And note that the so-called wealth effect expands not only BlackRock's AUM, but also its political pull in the boardroom. There's both coincidence and causality, in his opinion, he says, between things like Woca-Cola and all these idiotic, well, at least they think they know where the bread is buttered, corporate entities genuflecting to every sicko with a gender fetish, and the rise in BlackRock's AUM. So maybe it's no wonder why the standard fintwit commentary on the Fed is that QE and ZIRP goose equity prices, which arguably they do, but also that's what the Fed wants to do all the time. And that, he says, is the part I disagree with. And he says, I've been steadfast in my assessment as to why for nearly 2 years. Powell, he writes, was trapped by both COVID and the CARES Act to go along with extending this madness for another 2 years. And in the process, he handed the guy he calls Don Finkliosi the keys to the whole rotten candy store to ensure that what we're seeing today, maximal brand destruction, does Bud Light come to mind? That defies market logic has gotten ramped up to 11. Buying a huge stake in Fox is just one more brick in the new media stonewall in preparation for the upcoming war. All they had to do to seal the deal was convince everyone the global economy was still suffering because of, booga, 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 COVID, and that we needed more spending at the zero bound to reflate the economy. Powell, though, was supposed to be deposed and Lael Brainard installed to ensure continuity of policy, with them having then moved Janet Yellen back into a position of power as Treasury Secretary under the Bidenfuhrer. That has failed, says Luongo. Brainard is out at the Fed. She's prepping to replace Yellen in Biden's second term. So as the Biden-Harris soft launch of their re-election or re-infraudulating campaign was so well timed with Carlson's ouster from Fox, and the warning shots have been now fired at every major media outlet to toe the line like has never been seen before. So let's now, he says, talk about what's really going on with BlackRock in light of this failure to get rid of and replace Powell. which brings us to that term I mentioned right up front in the title, sci-fi. And no, it's not alien spaceships and robots. It's systemically important financial institutions. And for years now, writes Tom Luongo, Janet Yellen and Elizabeth Warren have brought up the idea of expanding the definition of sci-fi to non-bank entities, like, oh, hey, here's a surprise, BlackRock. BlackRock, though, has argued for years it can't be a systemically important financial institution because, quote, the British commissioner who took over from Barnier, Jonathan Hill, wanted the commission to work hand in hand with the financiers, and every time a debate or a hearing was organized, BlackRock's people were there, recalls Daniela Gabor. Then I realized it was no longer the banks that had the power, but the asset managers. We're often told that a manager is there to invest our money for our old age, but it's much more than that, she says. In my opinion, BlackRock reflects, and listen to this, the renunciation of the welfare state. Is this Cloward Piven at work? Anyway, she says this rise in power goes hand in hand with ongoing structural changes. Changes in finance, but also in the nature of the social contract that unites the citizen und the state. I can smell a great reset in here somewhere. Daniela Gabor explains that the European Central Bank, which commissions BlackRock to audit banks, has no power over the company. Quote, BlackRock's argument is simple. We do not do leverage. We do not act like banks. So we do not need to be regulated as a systemic institution. In fact, BlackRock, says Tom Luongo, slips under all the radar. They can be regulated for reasons known as microprudential to protect their customers, but not as a financial institution tasked with ensuring overall financial stability, she continues. And this conversation, notes Tom, has been going on at least since 2019. It resurfaced again this week as Janet Yellen brought it up. Now, why would she do that if, he says, as I've strenuously argued, she's Davos through and through? After all, wouldn't she continue arguing for the opposite per BlackRock and Don Finkliosi's instructions? I mean, who's calling the shots? Who's pulling the strings here, right? It all goes back, he says, to what I've been saying about BlackRock for over a year now. All of that AUM, asset under management, rests on a very slim pile of actual shareholder equity. Just $38.2 billion, to be precise. Now, here, folks, comes some inside baseball. As longtime patrons know, writes Tom Luongo, when I do a balance sheet analysis of a company, I strip out some things like goodwill and intangible assets from the asset side of the balance sheet, because those are simply piles of so-called value left over from all kinds of previous stuff that may or may not have any real value. So when you do that, it leaves Fink with less than $5 billion in shareholder equity. And even if you don't accept that, he notes, there's this $55 billion so-called other liabilities, which may in fact be derivative exposure that the company can play very fast and loose with, given what's happened in the past. Bottom line, these are some pretty big black boxes. So he says, here's the question, and that's one no one really ever asks. Does BlackRock actually have any equity today, or is this just all a great big psyop based on them voting our proxy for us? And when we look at the stock price, and here comes another chart you can't see, I gotta wonder if Wall Street isn't at least starting to think about asking that question. And because you can't see the charts, and maybe because it's a little bit deep anyway, I'm gonna skip over the stock analysis. But, he says, if it turns out BlackRock really is in real trouble because of falling asset prices, ESG backlash, rising interest rates, and failing and falling cash flow, then that would necessitate a change in the rules if it ever wanted to be bailed out. Remember, last year when the UK pension crisis developed, which took out Prime Minister Liz Truss and forced the Bank of England to intervene, the one holding the bag on the falling assets was none other than BlackRock. It had to do with CLOs, or collateralized loan obligations. So now, he says, is BlackRock, which was built on the same premise as Silicon Valley Bank, using non-balance sheet activity to resist being regulated as a sci-fi, now staring at a crisis if yields keep rising? Who's protected by the big inversion of the U.S. yield curve we keep staring at? Who swoops in? Isn't it amazing that now Yellen swoops in to demand BlackRock should be a sci-fi once the FUD surrounding it has reached a fever pitch? Who's everyone afraid of now? BlackRock. Why? because they own the world. But why aren't they regulated like the big banksters? Well, because they sit at the high table. Who gets screwed if they go tits up? The little guy. Whose fault will it be if BlackRock goes tits up? The Fed. You can hear Elizabeth Warren, he says, setting the political stage for all this right now. We have to protect U.S. workers from the evil Wall Street fat cats, so we'll bring them under the auspice of increased government regulation by labeling them as sci-fi. Who sits on the Financial Services Oversight Council? Who will make this decision? Then we have Jim Rickards and his ICE 9 scenario. He includes the link, and of course you know that Jim is another guy with a good head on his shoulders. But all of this boils down to the following. In short, BlackRock as a sci-fi would become a protectorate of the Treasury Department, and it circumvents any pending bankruptcy. And since BlackRock is just a pile of AUM on top of a relatively small balance sheet, it could be carved up pretty easily. Its book of business can be bought by the rest of Wall Street licking their lips at the thought of all those assets under management and consulting fees that generate the lion's shares of the company's cash flow. So now, does BlackRock suddenly want to be regulated as a sci-fi after having built itself into the monster it is by evading that very designation? And here, folks, is where the questions and the implied answers really flow. You can see the game here, writes Tom Luongo. Janet Yellen can force her own pal to bail them out when their balance sheet implodes for real, holding the holes in the pension funds hostage as blackmail. Why would they do that? Why would Fink do this? Well, if you want to nationalize the U.S. pension system, there's a concept. If we're going to be communist anyway, why not, right? And in the old U.S. dollar and the entire system, then you could do that during a major crisis. How did they tie Powell's hands during COVID? The CARES Act. How will they tie Powell's hands during the European sovereign debt crisis? By making BlackRock a sci-fi before it happens. What would you expect to happen between now and then? Snuffing out any major sell-off in U.S. Treasuries by managing credit spreads between U.S. and European debt. That, he said, would relieve the pressure on BlackRock's balance sheet and that of others. Now then, let's talk about the blowout in the U.S. credit default swap rates, as well as the massive plunge in the one-month T-bill rate last week, creating an historic spread of over 160 basis points between the one-month and the two-month. Yellen has been ramping up the rhetoric about the U.S. defaulting once the Treasury General Account is empty. Meanwhile, Biden and his Davos puppet masters are serious about trying to stop any kind of spending cuts because they want to balloon the U.S. deficit to the moon. Says Luongo, that would be to save the EU. I think they just kind of like the idea, folks, of exploding the whole stinking system. Because let's be honest, they do seem to hate America first. Anyway, BlackRock is more heavily exposed to Europe than the U.S. pension system, but still heavily exposed to both. What did Lagarde at the ECB put in place last July? Something called the TPI, the Transmission Protection Instrument, designed to protect credit spreads within the EU, at least nominally, but also internationally. What's been happening, though, during this major rally in the euro, up to $1.10, and Powell convincing the markets he's serious about not pivoting, a collapse of U.S.-European credit spreads, indicating preferential capital treatment into the U.S. and out of Europe. In short, he says, I think BlackRock's deteriorating balance sheet, as well as Yellen's intention to stiff U.S. bondholders, is setting us up for what he calls the biggest Lucy with the football moment in U.S. history. It's the biggest threat to Powell's higher-for-longer rate policy, as well as the future of the U.S. And it all comes down to playing hardball over the debt ceiling without significant spending cuts. Now, that is vital, and that really is the key to this whole thing, folks. It comes down, he says, to playing hardball over the debt ceiling without any significant spending cuts. If that happens, then Yellen is winning and Powell has been checkmated. If McCarthy and the GOP hold the line, then U.S. banking interests will tear BlackRock apart and take their business into bankruptcy. And then they'll take it from them in bankruptcy. And here Tom Luongo turns to Jim Rickards' analysis, because if they make BlackRock a sci-fi, it short-circuits all of this completely and then puts the onus directly on, guess who? The U.S. taxpayer. I can easily see BlackRock, he says, sacrifice on the altar of the Great Reset once its control over corporate interests has been turned over to the Treasury and the ECB. In fact, it may be the best play for them to nationalize all the assets that they have. $9 trillion in assets under management is a lot of win for the communists. And Fink, as I've already said, he notes, already has his seat at the high table. Which, notes Tom Luongo in conclusion, is why Tucker Carlson's firing is important, but really, it's just a sideshow in all of this. You got it. The big story is bigger still. May Yahuwah bless you and yours.